You're listening to a 3CR podcast created in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.
A lot of power in this world, and their opinions are often just presented as cute or entertaining, rather than the serious perspective of a different type of person. Then we're going to be talking to Jessica from the Unemployed Workers Union and 3CR's own Breadline show about the intersection of climate change and welfare. What if the only insulation in your cheap rental is possums? What if you can't afford to piss off your landlord by asking for a modern split system and the nearest place with air conditioning where you can sit down for free is half an hour away by bus? What if you lose your job because your CEO's third yacht gets smashed by vengeful orcas? What happens to regional communities when everyone has to go get a third precarious gig economy job just to survive and no one has time to be a volunteer firefighter? We'll have all the answers for you in about 20 minutes. And then I'll be going through the events for next month, events that you, dear listener, can attend, maybe even ones that you like. But first, exciting news for the Climate Action Show. Today is the second last day of Radiothon, and we've hit our target for the show. Yay! The biggest thanks to people who have donated, who include Renata, Lou, Joseph, Rod, Brendan, Richard, and Bronwyn, who gives us the message. Spread the word, tell the truth about the emergency that we're all in and heading down the road of a possible super El Nino. Karen says, keep going, Shay, you're making a difference. Meg, Shay, Anna, Peter, David, Lizzie, Stephen, Colleen, Elizabeth, David, Meredith, Kate, Susan, Elise, Barbara, and Daniel have all been incredible supporters of the show, and we're very grateful to have you. However, if you would like to hear the show every hour instead of every week, help us take over 3CR by continuing to donate. Every dollar will go towards buying a death ray for the 3CR rooftop and nuclear-powered submarines to patrol Punt Road, securing our geopolitical position. We also have Climate Action Show stickers. Subscribers, people who have already donated, come down to 3CR to pick one up, or you can actually just send us your address on 0488 809 855, and I'll just read that again for you. 0488 809 855, and we will put that in the post for you. Or you can email climateshow3cr@gmail.com to get them posted to you. If you haven't already donated to Radiothon, you can pick one up here at the 3CR reception by pledging a gold coin donation. These are hard-wearing vinyl stickers in two designs. We have funny design, and we have cool graphic design. We'll also be doing a live show on the 13th of July, talking about getting started with climate action, small little actions that you can take to get a little bit more climate activated or to escalate what you're already doing. It can be really hard to know where to start with these things, and we all have different preferences and different talents. So Shay, Bella, and I, and maybe some other people, will be talking about our journeys and what we found helpful in getting to a place where we're doing something regularly, but we're not getting overwhelmed or getting burnt out. We're actually having fun. You might not have heard my voice before, and that's because I'm usually the one behind the scenes, passing around the hors d'oeuvres, crying in the corner and saying, oh, that sounds hard, when actual presenters tell me that they're overworked. But I'm trying to be a little bit braver and a little bit more useful these days, so you'll hear me a bit more often. My name's Antimony, and I'm a freelance writer slash unemployed person from the northern suburbs of Melbourne. I write for the Endocrinologist Society of Australia, where I interview endocrinologists and write up the latest hormone research. It's actually really cool. You should look this up. You should look up Hormones Australia, and you should learn about these weird little juices that spurt out of our organs and make us feel things. It's very interesting. Hormones are super cool. And honestly, I want to have like a crossover episode between the Climate Action Show and hormones. Somehow, there has to be a way to do it. Honestly, because everything is interconnected, really. Look, in times of crisis and social upheaval, people turn to traditional gender norms as a solace and a comfort. And that means that people these days are taking a lot of testosterone. There you go. There's a link for you. I also write for Transform Transwear, which is a cute little company that makes binders and such for trans people. I write up stories of people's lived experience in an effort to make trans people seem cool and normal in the face of increasingly the uncool and strange culture war we happen to be living in. Because of these jobs, I've been really getting into science communication. I really like getting these like complex things like science research, like hard science and like people's life stories, and then making them relatable and understandable. So that's going to be my personal focus with the Climate Action Show. Often in life, it really feels like there's these these big topics like health, there's science, like, you know, things like Centrelink, insurance, the law, like all of these things feel really intimidating. And like there's this group of professionals who have this like arcane knowledge, but they're all really like fancy, expensive people. And you feel really alienated from these things that are actually really central to your life. And so I see my role as a kind of translator to make healthcare and science more accessible to people by taking away the jargon and saying, hey, this is how things work in words that normal people understand. Look, ideally, things wouldn't be so alienating in the first place. And in some areas like healthcare, that's changing, but it's changing slowly. And honestly, the world has like 2 weeks left before all communication is taken over by robots. So I'm enjoying my life while I still can. I also volunteer with a few health organizations and with the Gardens for Wildlife program. And I potter around here at 3CR quite a bit. So you'll be hearing more about these things too. Speaking of which, on this show, we usually talk to a lot of experts, people who use big words, people who have written some book or spoken at some conference, those kind of overachievers. And we also talk to local groups, people who are doing activisms, people who are heavily invested in this space, people who already know a lot. But that's not really most of Australia, is it? I think for a lot of people, climate change is this kind of this vague, bad future thing that's in the back of their minds, but it's not in the front of their minds. It's something that shows up eventually if you scroll far enough through your feeds, or it's something that's mentioned in passing, kind of half as a joke when you're talking about the future. But I think a lot of people don't really know what it is and what they should do about it. Even now, in the year of our Lord 2026, it just all seems very complicated and very doomy, and everyone's busy, and they want to talk about the electric network or superannuation. Everyone's just tired. And that's especially true of children who have a bit more future than the rest of us, hopefully, who are extremely busy with school and getting used to the overwhelming ridiculousness of the feeling of existing and trying to become a functioning adult in this very strange place. And so I wanted to get the perspective of normal people. I wanted, for once, to get people who are as invested in climate change as the experts and the activists, because climate change is going to affect us all in the future. And their opinions are just as important as the experts, because like feeling kind of bad, not knowing what to do, that's a climate action. And it's probably the most popular climate action that everyone in the world is doing right now. It's just not very effective. So I put the call out and I got a few voice notes from children from the ages of 5 or so to the ages of 13 or so, just getting their thoughts on what they understand about climate change, because, you know, that sort of forms the foundation of what they're going to do about climate change. I think it's worth saying as well that I got in touch with about 15 families about this, and about 5 got back to me, with quite a few saying that their kids don't want to talk about climate change because it's a really upsetting topic for them. And like, yeah, me too. The whole point of 3CR is that we present viewpoints that are underrepresented in other media, that we talk to people who don't really have a voice, that we present opinions that other media places don't. And I just thought that children are one of those groups in societies that had the least power, and their words are taken least seriously. Like, you know, children do have special protections. You're not allowed to eat them. You can't tell them that they're really ugly. But they have no political representation, and their opinions are often dismissed as irrelevant or uninformed or naive. And, you know, maybe that's true. Maybe kids just have bad opinions. But something that really struck me when I was talking to these people was just how their ideas are really similar to adults' ideas. It's just that adults use bigger words. And honestly, like, climate change is really simple. Climate change science is really simple. It's really intuitive to easy and easy to understand, even by children. Like, you know, if we burn fossil fuels, then we release the souls of dinosaurs that are angry that we set fire to their skeletons, and then they take revenge on humanity by changing the weather to the same temperature as prehistoric time, so humans go extinct and dinosaurs can once again dominate the Earth. Like, it's not that hard to understand. So the first thing I asked these kids was if they could describe climate change in their own words. And here's what they said.
No. What's that?
No.
No. What's that?
No.
No.
What's it called again?
Climate change.
Climate change. Climate change is you climb up a ladder and then you stop doing it forever.
I think it's about the world changing over time and, like, the stuff is, like the heat is changing because we're using too much dinosaur fossils, making oil and gas and those sorts of things.
Well, climate change is when the weather changes from, like, normal temperature to a big drought or a super rainy day, and I don't know too much about climate change, but I know that the weather can be very crazy when it changes, and I know that the seasons, depending on what place it is, that climate change can get from super hot to freezing cold or just normal.
I think climate change is when greenhouse gases get trapped inside the atmosphere and it causes sea levels to rise and temperatures to heat up.
Climate change is when the temperature may become hotter or colder due to chemicals in the atmosphere that cause the greenhouse effect.
Mm-hmm. Can I make it up?
Sure.
Blah, 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 a bit.
So then I asked them what the future is going to be like when they're super old, like really ancient, like 30 years old, like their parents.
When I'm super old, well, I hope that people start noticing that the Earth is getting hotter and hotter and life is starting to get weaker. And I think they'll do something about it, not with chemicals, but actually do it physically. I hope that in the future, when I'm older, technology's good, but it doesn't take over everything. Because I want the climate to be nice, nice temperature. Greenery and nice background. I think it's a good thing. And I really don't want to see the world when I'm older, like just a dry place with barely any animals anymore. Animals will be like dinosaurs, like they're not even animals anymore. Animals, the only people will be people. But I hope that the climate will be nice and it'll be nice weather to hang out around.
I guess it depends on if people decide to take action and stop like using factories that may release smoke, and using cars that need like petrol and things like that. But if people decide to ignore all of the needs to help with climate change, then the world later will not be really safe to live on.
Oh,
I think it would be like a bit more hotter if we keep on using those stuff. And there might be like a bit more like making these like chemical things and less kind of wood stuff. But for the wood, it's not bad, but it's still bad. Because if we use up all the dinosaur fossils and those things that make gas and oil, it'll get hotter and hotter and the world might burn up.
I think it could be still similar to how it is now, mm-hmm. As in there will be more electric, like, vehicles and everything. Mm-hmm. So we'll probably use electric stuff instead of petrol or anything like that.
Mm.
But yeah, there is still like littering and everything that will affect global warming in the future. But yeah.
Finally, I asked these kids the last questions. If they were elected Prime Minister tomorrow, if they were in charge of the whole Australia, what would they do right now about climate change?
Yeah, I would probably try to replace as much stuff as I could with like electric vehicles and all of like electric instead of petrol and yeah.
Me?
Mm, you.
I might make a limit of how much we could use and make out of wood and dinosaur fossils and that. Because it would get less hotter, and then if it's not hotter, it won't burn down the thing, the animals that live in Antarctica, and it would like kind of cool down more.
I wouldn't really change a lot since the current Prime Minister already has told people to have electric houses when they're moving in, so people aren't allowed to have non-electric houses.
Mm-hmm.
So it's better with climate change. I wouldn't usually change a lot.
If I were Prime Minister, I think I would start hiring teams, aka professionals or workers, to be their job to take care of the earth, kind of like gardeners, kind of like earth helpers. But what I really want is for the climate to be good, so I guess I would hire them to plant new trees, garden mostly every day, and try their best to keep the earth good. And I think that should be for everybody. If I were Prime Minister, I wouldn't be strict about it, but the climate I really care about. So I think being Prime Minister, I would hire people to garden new trees for fresh air and people to clean up the ocean and the lands so we don't have as much pollution and gas in the air, and then we'll have a fresh living life. And yes, some technology, just not that will take over life.
Well, I don't know about you, but I know which one I'm voting for. Let's have a very short break, and then we'll talk to Jessica from the Unemployed Workers Union about the intersection of inequality and climate change.
3CR, celebrating 50 years.
Throughout the month of June, we're asking you to support fierce, independent and community-controlled media by making a donation to our Radiothon.
We'll be taking donations online, over the phone and in the station to help keep 3CR going for another year.
To donate, go to 3cr.org.au, call the station on 03 9419 8377
or drop in at 21 Smith Street, Fitzroy during business hours.
3CR, celebrating 50 years.
What happens when your workplace burns down and then you don't have a job anymore? What happens if you're in a flood and then your legs dissolve off and then you have to go on the disability pension? What happens if you're already doing it tough and then the whole world starts getting even tougher, 1 degree at a time? What if escalating natural disasters starts costing the government a lot of money and then they don't increase JobSeeker for another 1,000 years? What if you're poor, but the only real solution to climate change being presented is the individual consumption of electric cars and solar panels, and you just don't have $50,000 lying around? What happens if you're an unemployed, divorced, depressed, middle-aged man, and then everyone assumes that you and people like you are going to vote for One Nation, but actually you're really cool? I don't know. I don't know the answers to the question, but Jessica does. Jessica is from the Unemployed Workers Union, and she and Kaz are here with me now. We're going to talk about all of these things, the intersection of climate change and welfare in Australia. Welcome to you both.
Thank you. Thanks a lot. Exciting to be on the show, considering I usually listen to it while I'm preparing for Breadline. Yeah, well, you've given me a bit of an intro there. So I thought I'd hit the listeners first with a stat. So just to get that over with, it's a straightforward one. The world's wealthiest 10% are responsible for 2/3 of observed global warming since 1990. So that's pretty straightforward, really. Mm-hmm. And we don't really need to go into the sort of detail about private jets and fleets of cars for listeners to sort of visualize that, really. So what we used to say in the 80s, the rich, we've got to get rid of the rich. Well, the rich are actually the ones who've been driving this. And I think that in a similar way to the way recycling is and this sort of huge proliferation of plastic is blamed on the individual consumers for buying a plastic wrapped whatever. Mm-hmm. In the same way, having, say, a non-electric car or any of the multiple ways that we individually contribute to climate change, climate disasters, is still unfortunately much too individualized and not seen as a sort of as a collective, as you know, collective solutions aren't really searched for because we're so busy beating ourselves up about our consumption.
And of course the solutions that are available to people, this individual consumption, you just can't do them if you're busy with other things or if you don't have the money or if you don't have the time. And the people that don't have the money all the time or the mental capacity to deal with these things are people who are already dealing with things.
That's right. And I've heard on your show before, you've been talking about the people who were made homeless by the floods in Lismore. Mm-hmm. And how, you know, of course, those houses were left empty and then people squatted them, which I think was great because they were just not being used at all. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, I think there's a whole range of areas. I mean, I got given a normal petrol car, actually, by a climate activist because he upgraded to to an electric car. But, you know, you can't really pay it forward if it's an electric car. And I suppose electric cars, I might have a quick whinge about because, I mean, I just get a little bit enraged by it. The same way electrification of your household can cost $4,000 to $5,000. That's if you own your own place, which a lot of us don't. Mm-hmm. So, you know, these things are really just aimed. It's sort of almost like, you know, the aware climate activists who are well off are just projecting those choices to other well-off people and then feeling very frustrated when not all those well-off people take up those solutions. And again, I'm not wanting to put down anyone who's got the money to get an electric car, but, you know, people talk about pay it forward for a cup of coffee for someone who's homeless. Well, you can't pay it forward an electric car, can you?
Yeah, I mean, you can't fix consumerism with more consumerism.
That's right. So yeah, you can't buy your way.
I don't think so, though.
No. Well, I mean, we'll go on to the more positive stuff soon. But, I mean, we also have the a lot of projects which are in my area, actually, which are aimed towards trying to get property owners to do the right thing in terms of the energy use of their house. And, again, I've heard on the grapevine last week that it hasn't been a great success. I could have predicted that because estate agents and property owners don't necessarily have the interests of their tenants at heart. It'd be great if they did. I'd love to hear some exceptions to the rule. But the take-up amongst estate agents in my area for this these great workshops where they're actually offering $1,000 incentives to actually encourage property owners to make environmentally sustainable changes to their property, has had zero take-up, is what I've heard on the grapevine.
So it's almost as like we can't really rely on individual people deciding individually on an individual basis to make excellent decisions in a timely manner. It's like we have to have some sort of larger
community action.
What's community?
Yeah, well, is it a community of the rich who all have aligned views, or is it a community? I was shocked to hear that in New York now there is going to be a rent freeze.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, you can do something with that with extreme pressure on property owners in regards to making their properties livable. I mean, and the same in a whole lot of other areas, I think.
I don't know about you, but I don't have heaps of optimism that things like that are possible or probable in Australia. To me, it feels like if there's going to be escalating disasters in the future, I'm not going to be able to rely on government to take care of the most vulnerable.
As we know, remember in the bushfires, you know, wasn't it ScoMo turned up somewhere in the middle of one of the disasters and people were so furious about the lack of response, people refused to give him the sort of photo op handshake type thing. And I think that's happening more and more, that it's not good enough for government reps to sort of turn up and, you know, say, we sympathise with the victims of this disaster.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's all just talk, no action.
Yeah, that's right. I mean,
Very, very slow actions that are due to come to fruition in 2035.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I was going to say it was lovely hearing those kids earlier and speaking total sense. And in my area, Bass Coast, Wonthaggi, Bunurong country, with the climate, the youth, you know, this school strike for climate crew were just a lovely breath of fresh air into the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
And we did some great actions apart from the marches around town, and then there was the going into the city. And we consulted a lot of the kids at the time and said, do you want us to sort of come with you into the city, or do you want us to do actions locally? And again, that had a huge impact. But again, in our area, we got the council. It's the only council that is actually a rural council that's declared a climate emergency.
Mm.
So that was a big thing. And a lot of that was the excitement by having all these young ones who've now grown up and who are sort of in their 20s, but who, you know, who really pushed that along. And right now we're getting the good result from that, because at our community garden, for example, the council funds talks about gardening, talks about different ways to live more sustainably, and they're all free, which is again the crucial thing. It's free, therefore anyone can join in, and we love sort of hosting them.
I don't want to put too much responsibility on young people, because I remember back in the 1870s being a young person myself watching Captain Planet, feeling like the adults were just waiting for me to grow up so I could fix their problems. And now I'm 40 and there's still problems, despite me, you know, I ate a vegetable once, like I went on a march one time and there's still problems. I tried. So I kind of know what it's like to be a young person and for people to just like sort of feel like you have to do the thing because you're the one with the ideas and the one with the energy. But we've already had a generation of that.
For sure, yes. I mean, it's sometimes overpowering, you know, the entrenched rich and powerful in this country and how they treat the planet as their playground, you know. Mm. But it comes back to the easy maths of there's more of us than there are of them, you know. They think they can go and have and swan in and talk about giving away islands to trillionaires and so on, but really it's that sort of base level frustration of the extreme rich, although it's not as strong here in some ways as it is in the UK where I've lived.
Mm-hmm.
It's still there, that feeling, how dare they really.
Yeah, not to give away the moral of the story, but of course, like the same people who are against climate change action are also against just welfare in general, and like people with disabilities and policies that benefit women and LGBTQIA plus people and, you know, people who are already likely to be marginalized. Like, it's exactly the same people who are doing all of that.
Yes, that's right. And yes, yeah, surviving climate disasters and emergencies when you've got no money, no savings. Mm-hmm. Oh, once I was on this really excruciating panel. Oh, they thanked me for my lived experience. But, you know, I was trying to put, it was reps from councils and welfare organisations, mm-hmm. But I was just trying to say, look, you know, someone's renting a place, it's in a flood-prone area. They haven't got $5,000 to relocate, mm-hmm. you know. So all these, you know, there's a whole lot of issues. And, yeah, the project I was involved with, the Cozy Home Project, I can talk a bit about that if you like.
Yeah, I just want to point out that wealth insulates you, not in just a literal way, is that you can buy insulation, but it means that you can adapt more easily to problems. It means that you've got that buffer where you're not stressed about things all the time, and so you have like the mental capacity to think about larger things and more than a week in the future. And it also means that if something bad happens, you can deal with it, and that you know that you can deal with it. So I don't know, most of us, if we were dealing with like an unexpected vet bill, or like our car breaks down, or our like fifth hand fridge breaks down, or if like a friend of ours is like behind on a bill and we need to give them $50, like that's going to affect us for the rest of the month. That's going to like really affect our budget for maybe a few months. And so we're always worrying about the potential for these problems. We're always dealing with something that's going on, our microwave exploding or like the roof falling in or something. But that just doesn't happen if you have enough money. You can just pay someone to deal with it.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
And there's just, if there's going to be more of these things in the future, there's going to be like your roof falling in and also your garage flooding or like your microwave exploding. And also it's 45 degrees.
Mm,
like you already don't have the capacity to deal with the problems that we've got now.
Yeah. And the climate anxiety side of things too. Mm. We had a power cut in Wonthaggi that was coming up to 24 hours. And I just noticed mm-hmm. people freaking out. There were people driving around the place looking for bags of ice, not drugs. They were looking for ice because they were panicking about the food in their freezers, yeah. you know, going off. And, you know.
Yeah, because all the food in your freezer going off is a disaster if you can't afford to buy another freezer full of food.
Yeah, that's right. And, you know, again, even that, yeah, that anxiety. And I noticed another guy who actually used to come to the community garden, and I think most of the time he got his food from the takeaway places. And so he was in a real panic. And I said, sit down, have a cup of tea, you know. I brought my gas bottle, camp stove in, we had a cup of tea. And I just noticed that sort of feeling of, oh, we're in it together, you know, we're not, you know, we'll get through this, that again, well, against community organisations and all that.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah.
Now the government isn't stepping up, it does feel like we have to rely on these informal networks.
Well, I know you've talked about it on the show before about, you know, networks of mutual aid. Obviously, it's the only way that we're going to get through it. But the larger questions of, you know, I often talk about the cyclone that hit New York City and how the people who'd had the experience of running, say, phone charging systems using solar power or pedal power, which they'd built up through Occupy, then they were able to use the victims of the cyclone that hit New York City and that large areas got flooded, and they were able to use those skills. So all those skills are going to be needed for sure.
Mm.
Yeah. And then there's also that feeling of being swamped by all that information. And, and I'm constantly stopping myself thinking, how long did I just spend half an hour scrolling, you know? Again, it's only just happened in the last 5 years, I suppose, all the information overload that we've had.
And some of that is deliberate too, it feels like.
Oh, yeah, for sure. As we know, the algorithm wants us to keep us scrolling, doom scrolling, everyone talks about now. So it's reached popular culture.
Yeah. Technology using people instead of people using technology.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Tell us about some of these initiatives that you've started.
Oh, okay,
or that you know about.
So it was talking to a local climate activist who was very sort of frustrated and angry, really, about everything.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm an electrician, well, I trained as an electrician in my younger days because of squatting, you really need to have an electrician who knows what they're talking about. But we talked about how a lot of the things that can be done to your household are sort of fixable if you've got a few skills and a bit of money towards it. And so we encouraged a local organisation, which is called the Energy Innovation Co-op, which is quite involved with the whole electric car, solar panels on the roof. But they'd heard that there was some money from the state government, and that was to fund a group. It ended up being 30. We had enough budget for 30 houses to increase to decrease the drafts and make them more livable.
Mm-hmm.
And in Wonthaggi, it's usually cold more than heat that we think about, cold breezes getting in, drafts and so on. But so we had a budget, but a lot of it wouldn't have been possible except for this lovely green doctor who was just so passionate about climate action. But he said, right, I'll do a lot of the stuff. And I've got this thing I've invented, which is basically a strip of wood which has rubber inserted in it, which you can put around a door frame, because if you're trying to insulate an old house, the door frame's not going to be all square.
Therefore, change from season to season as
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. So we had that as a resource, and then it was up to me to go and find 30 people. Mm-hmm. So I didn't find that at all hard, because I know where the people who are most desperate hang out in Wonthaggi, and that's at the food pantries.
Mm-hmm.
So I went straight down there and started giving people flyers, and the idea was that people who were renting could get it done as well, but they didn't have to inform their landlord. So some people straight out were too panicked by the idea that the landlord would find out that they've been improving the livability of the place, and they just wouldn't.
How dare they?
Yeah, but they got into a panic because of the ever-present threat of the rent being raised. But the people who thought they'd give it a go for whatever reasons took it up, and it was great. I mean, I love being able to give a service for free, and again, having this doctor who would help. Now my knees aren't very good, so I'm not great at going up ladders, but I was doing a lot of the other stuff. He was going up the ladders, and we'd have a group, some people who trained up about energy efficiency, so they could go into the houses as beforehand and do a proper assessment, and then we'd come in with the practical stuff. So it was really satisfying, and we did it. And again, people said, oh, how did you find all the people? Well, I know where people hang out in my town who most need that. And it was pretty successful. Oh, we had these other gadgets which were specially made, because a hot water system has a valve which you're meant to release every now and again just to make sure that it's working properly.
Mm-hmm.
Those let off a lot of heat, so it gets hot around them.
Oh.
So if you can seal that, then you're stopping the hot water system from losing heat. So we had them as well. We had a lot of pipe insulation. You know, that's plastic, not good, but, you know, we used it to sort of insulate pipes. And then we talked, you know, to people. The classic one, which I still have in my place because I'm pretty slack, is above a curtain. Instead, you can put a pool noodle, or you can put you can put rolled twisted towels, which is what I've done, just above, because the cold air is then kept near the window rather than flowing up and then making your room cold. But, yeah, so we did that. That was a few years ago now, and I was hoping it'd continue, but it didn't, because it didn't have funding, and sort of the doctor went on to do other things, no doubt good. But another interesting initiative is in Geelong, and that is interesting because that's tied in with the idea is you can have one room which is comfortable, and that's what I do in my house. But
is it like the Cozy Room Project or something
Yeah, it is. But what I'm not mad keen on is you have to prove that you've got some kind of health issue before you can get them coming in and doing that free upgrade, so you've got a comfortable room. As far as I'm concerned, it should be anyone who's got an uncomfortable house should be able to improve it. But, I mean, that's something that could be done anywhere where people put their minds to it. Mm. Like a mutual aid network could set up something like that and could set it up on a broad scale. And also there is another initiative in my area now which is followed on with the same idea, and they've got Earthworker involved, as people listeners might know. Earthworker is the workers' co-op based in Latrobe Valley, which manufactures solar heat pumps. And so they're also doing some of the retrofitting. But again, the whole tenant situation, you know, we did go to some places where the houses were pretty out of control, but they'd done possibly good things, like trees were growing all over them, and that was actually making the house probably cooler in summer. Mm-hmm. It made our job not particularly easy, a lot can be done, again, once you identify a problem.
I would love to hear, just as we finish up here, I would love to hear your absolute utopian dream project. If you had $1 trillion, like some people do these days, what would you do? What would you put it towards? What would you do to help people on welfare and low-income people deal with the climate challenges of the future?
I don't know. You can have a go too, Kaz, but I suppose mine would be just to build a whole lot of amazing sustainable properties, which would be capped at 25% of income, like public housing is, and they'd be all different sizes and shapes, and they'd have accessibility on some, and some of them would be up high for people who like to be up high. And I just think roofs overheads and a sort of energy efficient place to live,
somewhere where you're not scared of your landlord.
Yeah, that's right. Because as you said, all that anxiety, all that fear of you know, the knock on the door. And I've got a song about that, but anyway, I won't break into a song. You've got a show to run.
We don't have the accordion here today. And Kaz, I'd love to ask you the same question.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting, $1 trillion, because I, in a more, my idea of things, I'd take out money. Currency, not so much, like, but money itself.
Yeah.
I think it's our labour in a concept, right? And so when our labor is simplified so much, made so efficient, it takes out so much integrity of how it can be used and how it's funneled and everything.
Alienating, you might say.
And it takes away from the purpose, like that purpose we all kind of feel to, I guess, not really, but like to go through life.
Yeah.
Like we need to feel fulfilled, or else you get depressed, you slow down, you're like, what's the point, right? So,
and we know this is unemployed and underemployed people.
Yeah, and I think yeah.
So your solution to the climate crisis affecting lower income people is just like everyone's on a low income because there's no income because there's no money.
Yeah, when a time of great healing, I feel like would be amazing.
Oh, sweet. I want to talk about this for a whole another hour. Do you mind cancelling your show? We'll just talk about this.
Well, we'll have to talk again because I'm here every...
I want to get you on the Modern Monetary Theory show and watch their heads explode.
Thank you.
All right, thank you for the chat today, guys. I'm going to play something that I'm going to randomly click on, and I'm going to tell you about some climate events, some climate actions that you can join in July.
3CR, celebrating 50 years.
3CR Community Radio Melbourne is Australia's first community radio station, owned and operated by a federation of community organisations.
Hello and welcome to the very first edition of Women on the Line, the national program of women's news and current affairs.
We're at our new studios in Cromwell Street, Collingwood, and the news, brand spanking new transmitter just north of the Collingwood Town Hall.
This is the whole importance of having 3CR and public radio, is the fact that for the first time you were hearing a black person's view about his life.
It does represent a unique achievement in democratising the airwaves, not only in Australia, but in the world.
3CR, celebrating 50 years.
Make your donation during our annual Radiothon. To donate, call 03 9419 8377 or go online at 3cr.org.au.
and we're back, and I'm going to just list some things at you, so I hope you enjoy that. So the first event we have on is in Geelong at the Belmont Hotel. There's a talk on how will we live at 52 degrees? Lessons from the Pilbara by an architect on Tuesday, July 28th at 6:30, hosted by Talks on Tuesdays. How will we live when the temperature hits 52 degrees? Insights from the Pilbara on thermal comfort and safety in future housing design. We also have Fire Moves Faster, a poetry and music performance night happening in Geelong and Bendigo on the 14th and 12th of August, hosted by the Wheeler Centre. We have a walk and talk in Gisborne, which sounds pretty fun, actually. It's about revegetating your property. That's on Friday, the 24th of July, 1 p.m. That's hosted by the Macedon Ranges Shire Council and the Healthy Landscape Project. As we walk along Jackson's Creek, Amy Jackson will share practical tips and lessons from the various revegetation projects along the site. However, if you want to stay in, we can go to Romy Ash and the Writing Climate Fiction Workshop, which is happening at Collingwood Library, that's in September actually, Saturday, September 19th at 10:30 a.m, hosted by Yarra Libraries. And we can join award-winning author Romy Ash in a workshop exploring ways to write compelling climate fiction. Look that up on the Yarra Libraries website. From the Darabin Climate Action Group, you can join us on 10 a.m. Thursdays on the St. George's Road bike path to pick up litter, do a bit of weeding, chalk some climate messages, chat with passers-by, and give them our information flyer. After all that hard work, please enjoy a cuppa and a chat with us at a local cafe. New members are also very welcome to join our friendly group. So that sounds like a nice introductory meeting. From the Mary Beck Climate Action Group, they have their Climate Action Mary Beck monthly meeting. New people are very welcome, but please contact us beforehand at climateactionmarybeck@gmail.com so we know to expect you. That's on the third Monday of the month at 6:30 p.m. Also in Coburg, we have the weekly vigil to end fossil fuels. That's on Tuesdays at 11 a.m. It's a low-key vigil outside Peter Khalil's Sydney Road office. The United Nations Association of Australia in Victoria and the City of Melbourne are partnering to deliver a series of 7 events to highlight climate action in lead up to COP26. And I'm going to read out a big paragraph for you. The next one is the Climate and Sustainable Cities and Communities Implications and Actions for Melbourne. This event will bring together people who are interested in exploring what it takes to build a genuinely sustainable and inclusive city and community, and how we can do that in Melbourne. Are you a person working on or has an idea for an innovative project which can contribute to Melbourne as a sustainable city? Bring your projects and ideas along to this interactive event, which will focus on ways we can use innovation to ensure Melbourne's sustainability in the face of climate change. Or just come along to find out what's happening in Melbourne. That'll be on the 18th of July, and there'll be future events talking about a circular economy, climate leadership, and youth leadership in the months to come. Friends of the Earth has quite a bit on. They have Act on Climate Collective Meeting and Dinner, online and in person, on Tuesday the 30th of June. That's tomorrow at 6 p.m. We can also join them for a Sustainable Cities Collective Meeting. That's on Wednesday the 1st of July at 6 p.m. And they have the Energy Justice Collective Social Night with screen printing and a dinner. That's on Thursday this week at 6 p.m. These are weekly events that are held at that space in Collingwood. If you can't make it this week, maybe you can make it next week. Extinction Rebellion also have some regular events that you can pop into and say hi. They do Fitzroy Fridays outside Sarah Whitty's office. That's at 12:30 p.m. to 1:30 p.m. at 142 Johnson Street, Fitzroy, with a nice coffee and chat afterwards with some super lovely people. They also do St Kilda Fridays outside Josh Burns's office at 12:30. And if you're in the city and awake a little bit earlier, you can head to Parliament for the Friday Vigil for Climate. That starts at 8:30 a.m. and goes till 11:30 a.m. The Australian Conservation Foundation is holding a Nature Law Power Hour, where you get together with some people and really get down to business messaging people about the draft National Environmental Standards. Join them for an hour of power to dial up the pressure on Environment Minister Murray Watt to protect nature. In the session, they will call their local decision makers and take online actions targeted at Minister Watt. That's on this Friday, the 3rd of July, at 11 to 12. So you can head to the Australian Conservation Foundation to register for that little bit of action. The Parents for Climate actually have quite a few things going on all around the country. But if you're just starting out with them, head to their Finding Your Role online meeting on Tuesday, the 28th of July. They've got a session at 12 p.m. or at 7:30 p.m. Very organised. Environment Victoria invites you to join their Action Network monthly call to discuss shared challenges, learn, share and strategise with others. That's on Tuesday, July 21st at 6:30 p.m. The Wilderness Society has a few chats and a bushwalk coming up. On July 1st at 7 p.m, you can join Wilderness Society staff and supporters from across the continent for an online briefing on the next steps in the work of putting forests before profits. During that session, they will learn more about the threats facing Australia's native forests and the opportunities to protect them from corporate greed and greenwashing. You can take action together to help protect forests and wildlife and explore how you can build a strong and growing network of people who cannot be ignored. In a few places in Melbourne, they have a few networking for nature events where you can come along to talk with fellow environmental lovers about protecting nature and Victoria's tall mountain ash forests and their plan to make decision makers take action. They've also got a Community Organising 101, that's online training on the 28th of July at 7 p.m. This training introduces the theory and practice of community organising, how we bring people together to make change, and how we organise at the Wilderness Society. Community organising is an approach to social change that builds power by bringing people with shared interests together to take collective action. It recognises that lasting change comes from coordinated groups rather than isolated individuals, and focuses on shifting power relationships that underlie social and environmental problems. On the 4th of July, you won't be able to go because you'll be at 3CR's 50th anniversary celebrations. But while you're there partying with us, you can daydream about being on a bushwalk in the Styx Forest, which will include guided forest walks through an imminently threatened rainforest, ecology activities, and a panel discussion to finish. Bring your own packed lunch, of course. That's at 11 a.m. and head to the Wilderness Society to find out a bit more about that. At the Science Gallery in Melbourne, there's currently an exhibition about planetary emergencies, and it's called Emergency. It brings together artists, science, and collaborators from across the globe to talk about how we adapt to world in flux. In an age marked by ecological collapse, technological acceleration, and social upheaval, adaptation becomes not only a biological imperative, but a creative and ethical act. How might we not only survive through change, but emerge into a critically reimagined future? That exhibition is on until December, and it could be a cute date. Psychology for a Safe Climate, they're going off at the moment. They have climate cafes running most days. Whether you're an activist, a youth, a mental health worker, a normal person with normal emotions, or if you're particularly sad about coral reefs in particular, there is a climate cafe for you. There are people who want to talk about your feelings with you. They also offer quite a bit of professional development for people working within mental health who want a bit more training in the climate grief area. If your group has any events that you would like to promote, please get in touch with us at climateaction3cr@gmail.com. And that was my first live solo show for the Climate Action Show. And I hope you enjoyed it. I found it terrifying. I'm going to go run away now and regret that I ever did this. But it was very lovely being with you this evening. And thanks once again to our subscribers and donated. Please remember to pop into 3CR and pick up a sticker because they're really cool. And we will see you on the next show next Monday, unless we fix climate change before then, in which case we'll take the day off.
Did you know that each donation over $2 you make to 3CR's Radiothon is tax deductible? That means that when you're doing your tax return business, you can claim your 3CR donation as a legitimate tax deduction. To make a pledge to this year's Radiothon, call the station on 9419 8377 or donate online at 3cr.org.au/donate.
3CR, celebrating 50 years.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.